Hello, my name is True Crime is a weekly podcast where we bring you a new true crime episode every Tuesday. Some material may not be suitable for a sensitive audience, so listener discretion is advised. We're back.
Welcome back.
Yeah, we're back. Another episode, another week.
Another dash of true crime for y'all.
What?
We're gonna what?
So, if you're new here,
thanks for showing up.
Yeah.
If you're old here,
what up? So before we jump into the story, we have a few Apple Podcast reviews that we wanted to give some shout outs to. So the first one comes from Lori528. She said, great true crime podcast to add to your list. Love the facts, love the commentary, love the banter. Thank you. You guys are killing it. Keep up the great work and follow them on Instagram.
Wicked, thanks.
You got a heart.
Yeah, that's sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate the reviews. We really enjoy reading them.
We do. It makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Well, yeah. at least me.
Me too.
I feel good.
We have another one from, do you want to read this one?
Oh, absolutely. Let's see here. This is from, sorry if I butcher the last name here, but Johnny Schreer. And it's titled Taxi. If you want to ride with a stranger, call a taxi. Funny dude. Well, thank you.
Yeah, so it's cool because now I'm using this new app that I can see all of the podcast reviews from other countries as well.
Yeah.
So before I was only just, I guess, seeing the ones from the United States, and now I'm seeing reviews from
Nebraska
all over the world. So that's cool. Yeah, I had no idea that we only got reviews from our country. I don't know if that's right, but for some reason, like, that's all I'm able to see until I started using this new app. So now I can see all of the reviews,
or at least you think.
Yeah, I think. So excuse-moi if I sound like crap. We've been sick.
Yes, we have,
and we've had the funk.
I mean, I sound like a gem right now. But, yeah. You know, a little nasally.
So, just a heads up before we get into this.
Yeah, just so you guys know that you might catch what we had if you listen too closely.
You might. All right, so you want to jump into this?
Yes.
Let's jump in.
I want to jump into this like a kid at a trampoline house for his first time.
Okay, let's go.
Let's jump.
All right.
Okay.
Let's go.
Well, EMS. Mm-hmm. Can you please dispatch a unit out to my location? Give me a reference to my wife. I left the location. I'm back and around on Carver Road now. I'll be back in about 2 minutes. She's having suicidal thoughts. My kids are at home with her, so I'm trying to hurry up and get back there. I'm driving. She just said that she's been experiencing suicidal thoughts right now. She told me to take care of the boys, so I'm trying to hurry up and get back home just to make sure that nothing's going to happen to them.
Any weapons inside the house?
Just my service weapon.
That 911 call came in at approximately 1 a.m. on Friday, April 15, 2016. The caller is Matthew Boynton, a 20-year-old Griffin police officer in Griffin, Georgia. He stated that he had just received a suicidal text message from his wife, 19-year-old Jessica Boynton. So let's back it up just a little so we can talk about Matthew and Jessica as well as their relationship, because in order to understand their story, you need to understand all the things that had led up to this point.
Jessica Lester had met Matthew Boynton in high school during her 10th grade year. Some of her friends had convinced her to go out with Matthew, a cute, popular junior who was the grandson of the sheriff of Spalding County. At first, she wasn't so sure. She didn't really understand why he wanted to date her above all other girls. They came from completely different backgrounds. Jessica was quiet, cultivated, artsy, always enjoyed photography, and was not quite as popular as Matthew, the rich, cute boy. She and her siblings had been raised on a farm by her grandparents after her parents had abandoned them. But eventually her friends had talked her into it, and within a year of dating Matthew, Jessica found out she was pregnant with their first son when she was 16 years old. Although her grandparents offered to help raise the baby, she had decided that she wanted to raise her son with Matthew and start a family with him. Her family had stated that they believed the reason she made this decision was largely due to her childhood of being left by her parents. Being pregnant and having a serious boyfriend made her feel like someone finally really loved her.
The couple settled down in a house near Matthew's grandparents. It was then that her family and friends started to notice that Jessica seemed to be very isolated. She never really hung out with her friends or saw her family. She finished high school through online courses. They all considered the fact that Jessica was a new mom, and a very good one, so they figured she was trying to dedicate all of her time to raising her son. Behind closed doors, though, it was much more than that. Matthew had started to intentionally drive a wedge between Jessica and everyone she knew.
So, for instance, he would guilt her or bully her into not spending time with her family and friends. So, on one occasion, during their son's first Christmas, they had been spending time at Jessica's family home. One of the first times she had seen her family in months, when Matthew forced Jessica to leave before they had even had a chance to open gifts. And on another occasion, he pulled a similar stunt at the graduation party that her grandparents had thrown for her. Being proud of her, they had made a short film about her accomplishments. However, once again, Matthew made her leave just as the movie started. Things had only worsened, though, after Matthew followed in his grandfather, Wendell Beam's, footsteps, as he took a job in law enforcement, something that he had wanted to do since he was very young. Once he graduated high school, he worked his way up to a police officer in Griffin. When looking into his personal file at work, his superiors noted and described him quite well. Dedicated to being a police officer, but still pretty controlling. One of his senior officers had taken him aside and told him that he needed to lighten up a bit.
Then, in 2014, Jessica found out she was pregnant with her second child. And this is when the couple decided to get married. But the wedding was short-lived because Matthew did what he had always done when Jessica was around any friends or family. He made her leave less than an hour into their wedding reception. He knew he had full and total control over her at this point. They had the kind of relationship that many claim to be picture-perfect until you have physically seen them together, and it was just toxic. The two finally moved into a bigger place for their growing family. They rented an apartment in Griffin. Jessica finally felt like the scoreboard was a little more even, being that they weren't living so close to his grandparents anymore. Unfortunately, it wasn't, because Matthew grew more controlling over Jessica. She was left in the apartment with their sons, Tyler and Tallon, most every day, with no car, no money. Even on days that Matthew would drive the patrol car, he would make sure to take the keys to his truck so that she had to call his grandparents if she needed a ride or something from the store.
Yeah, so remember, she's a stay-at-home mom with a 2-year-old and an 8-month-old baby. I've been a stay-at-home mom, and it's tough. I honestly can't imagine not having the freedom to go to the grocery store or take the kids to the park for a play date.
Or the hospital, if they need to go to the hospital in the event of an emergency.
Right, you know, like, those little things like that, minus the hospital visit, those help you as a parent blow off steam when you're at home all the time with no grown-up interaction. You're just stuck with two toddlers, and it can really take a toll on you.
It sure can.
So I can only imagine how she felt at that point. While living in the apartment complex, Jessica became friends with a next-door neighbor named Megan, who said that there were times she could hear them argue and felt that something bad was going to happen. She said that Jessica had confided that she had found, in the spring of 2016, just 6 months after they married, that Matthew was cheating on her. And she found this while looking through his Facebook messages. Oddly enough, he was cheating on her with a dispatcher from the Spalding County Sheriff's Department named Courtney Calloway. When Jessica finally addressed Matthew about the affair, she told him that she knew he had been spending all of his time with Courtney and that she didn't want to keep pretending and playing house. So the couple decided to go forward with getting a divorce, but because the relationship had been so controlled by Matthew, Jessica had to get a plan in order before moving out, which she did so. Jessica made arrangements to move in with her sister Dusty while her grandparents helped with setting up an appointment for Jessica with an attorney.
Matthew had begun to call his fellow officers and tell them things like Jessica would curse, yell, and put her hands on him when they argued, always pinning the couple's fights on Jessica. It wasn't like he was necessarily filing any written report against her, but it was almost like he wanted them to be aware, you know, something to back up his side of the story. While Jessica had started keeping track of every single thing that happened between the couple, with the kids, literally their every move, something that she liked to refer to as a divorce diary, also something that Matthew knew nothing about.
And that's a really good idea to keep track of all of that stuff, because you never really know when you're going to need to look back on something,
absolutely,
especially when you're going through a divorce, mm-hmm, or family court, things like that. I've known a ton of people that's had to do something similar to that. So,
mm-hmm, I even spoke with an attorney one time who told me that he kept a detailed record in those little tiny books of, mm-hmm, every one of his,
meetings with his wife, when they were going back and forth with their children.
Custody thing, mm-hmm, or something like that.
Yeah.
That stuff is admissible in court.
Right.
It'll hold up in court.
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely. And it's not like she was doing anything wrong by keeping this like private divorce diary, because remember, they're getting ready to get a divorce. They're in the process to start making that, like taking that step forward.
Right.
So it's a good thing that she was keeping track of all this stuff.
Yeah. And from the looks of it, like the information that we have, it looks as though she's doing it from a relatively non-biased way. It's very calmly and well thought out, well written.
Right.
You know, it's not bias in,
right,
any way.
Yeah, it's just like facts. And
yeah,
because I was able to pull some of the pictures of the divorce diary, and it's just simple notes, just keeping track of typical things. So
not like time dates,
right,
that, you know, he was,
yeah,
gone.
Absolutely. Things started to become even more heated between the two as time passed. On April 14th, 2016, Megan, the next door neighbor, claims that Jessica and Matthew had been arguing again when Matthew left and Jessica arrived at her apartment with their boys, very upset about the argument. She said while Jessica was there, Matthew had started texting her over and over about going to pick up formula for the baby. Now, Jessica had started to wean her son and was getting ready to start formula. So this is why Matthew was kind of nagging her about going to the store to get the formula. Megan said that she had a really bad feeling and told Jessica to please come back over after they returned and she could stay with her. But Jessica never came back to Megan's apartment.
Then around 10:15 p.m., the security cameras at Walmart picked up Jessica, Matthew, and their two boys as they entered the store. It then picks them up in the baby section having a very heated argument before exiting the store and leaving together. However, Matthew sent a text to another fellow officer telling him that he and Jessica had gotten into an argument and that she had refused to get in the truck and leave Walmart with him.
Which is very interesting because clearly in the Walmart surveillance, you see, I think at one point you see them walking out to the truck and then she walks maybe back inside and then back out to the truck and gets in and leaves with Matthew. So I think it's very odd that he was contacting his fellow officer, telling him that they had gotten into an argument and she was refused to, mm-hmm, get in the truck and go home with him.
Right.
And
so
he
probably like told her to go get something or put something back or something of that nature.
Or maybe they were arguing and she got, mm-hmm, out of the car and then she was like, well, crap, like I don't really,
yeah,
have any way home. But it's just strange because it's almost like he's setting a narrative.
Yeah, exactly. He's setting it all up, you know,
yeah,
like why the first thing. OK, when you and I would get into arguments, the first thing I do is obviously want to resolve it with you.
Right.
It's not pick my phone up and text a buddy and,
exactly,
be like, dude, like what the fudge, you,
right,
know, or anything like that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know,
The officer had even told Matthew, like, dude, like, you can't force her to get back in the car. If she doesn't want to get in the car with you, then she's not going to get in the car with you. You can't make her leave with you.
Yeah, even if you're a police officer, you,
right,
don't have that right.
It's very interesting that he said that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are interesting.
We want to take a second to thank our sponsors. Listen to some of your favorite shows ad-free with Stitcher Premium, like Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, My Favorite Murder, Science Rules with Bill Nye, and more.
Plus, get access to Stitcher Originals, bonus episodes, comedy albums, and more. Only $4.99 a month or $34.99 a year.
Go to stitcher.com/premium to sign up today and use promo code
Hello, my name is for 1 month free on your monthly plan.
Also, I wanted to mention that there were some reports claiming this and other places I didn't see it anywhere. So I was kind of iffy on putting it in, but it was said that Matthew had actually filed an official police report this night. After they got back from Walmart, apparently an officer had stopped over and Matthew filed a report based on the fight that they had had earlier in the evening before Jessica had went over to the neighbor's house. And this time he filed, you know, that she had been poking him in the chest and putting her hands on him. Oh, and this was around 11 p.m. supposedly when this officer had come over. So I'm wondering if he, like, was Jessica there when he arrived to take this report, or did he even go inside the house? You know, I feel like that's a piece of this puzzle that's kind of iffy and interesting if it is in fact what happened, because that, in my opinion, would almost clarify whether or not Jessica had actually rode back home with Matthew or not. I mean, I fully believe that she did because, like I said, she didn't have any other vehicles. They only had the one. And it's not like she had really any other way to get back home. And we've seen her leaving, you know, Walmart with Matthew and the security cameras. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Later that night, after midnight, Matthew said he left Jessica and the boys at their apartment to go meet up with another fellow officer at the Waffle House. But before he left, Jessica had been upset, possibly having a panic attack, and asked him to call an ambulance, but instead, he just left to go meet his officer friend. While on the way, he was texting back and forth with his girlfriend, Courtney. The two sent between 70 to 80 text messages at this time. Just before he made it to the Waffle House at 12:54 a.m., he received a text message from Jessica saying,
"I can't do this anymore. Take care of Tolan and Tyler. Tell them I love them every day. I have been suffering for a while, and no one has noticed. Here lately, I haven't been able to recognize the person in the mirror. This is not the first time I've had suicide thoughts. I love you and the boys."
After this, Matthew sent a text to Courtney, responding to a joke she had sent him before calmly calling 911 to ask them to send someone out to his house to check on his wife. While on the phone with dispatch, they asked him if there are any weapons in the house, and he responded, "Just my service weapon." Instead of going to the Waffle House as planned, Matthew said he turned around and headed back home. Matthew arrived back at their apartment before officers were on the scene. He said as soon as he entered the apartment, he heard their youngest son crying and then two gunshots. He said he ran to the closet in the couple's bedroom where he kept his service weapon, but the door was locked. So he grabbed his police radio and called in two shots fired. This was 6 minutes after he made the first 911 call.
What? How far away did they live from the Waffle House?
I'm not really sure, but do you remember the whole 70 to 80 text messages between him and his girlfriend Courtney or whatever on the drive to the Waffle House?
Plus, he made a phone call to 911.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. He totally made a phone call to 911 as well, which probably took at least 30 seconds to a minute.
That seems very odd. I mean, this is 6 minutes isn't that long.
No.
So if he made it to the Waffle House, like he claimed, and turned around and drove all the way back home.
He even interrupted somewhere in there to reply to a joke from Courtney or something like that, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that he must. I don't know. This is very strange.
Okay, and then the likelihood, the oddity, just the pure happenstance of him hearing the two gunshots.
Right.
You know what I mean? Come on.
Interesting.
Making it there before.
I totally agree. And here's another thing. Wouldn't you, like, go check on your child instead of, like, grabbing your police radio and running away? I mean, if I heard my son crying, I would make sure to find my children if I'm hearing gunshots.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't just kind of run away.
I mean, but the radio, like, was a good idea, but he could have been on the radio while doing all that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, he's a trained police officer.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think it's crazy.
There's something fishy.
Right.
Plainly fishy. Like, it's very obvious to see.
So, after radioing into the police station, Matthew sends yet another text message to his girlfriend saying, "Give me a few to text back. Long story, I'll tell you later." When he radioed in, he said he had feared that Jessica had their youngest son in the closet with her and had possibly shot him and herself. Matthew also said that he was worried that she may shoot him as well. He also said I smell gun smoke, which I find that very strange. Like, they have two children. So is it because he heard the youngest crying that he thought that maybe she was going to shoot him and her? The whole thing is strange.
It is very strange.
None of it makes any sense. And
so
him saying that he smelled gun smoke, like, I don't know. I just feel like he's really setting the stage here.
Yeah, he's definitely, I mean, that's what I've always thought. From the moment I heard this case, I thought that, you know, it was all very suspicious. And his behavior, his actions and things like that were very, very odd.
Exactly. And then, like, he claims, too, that that there were two shots, like, making it sound like she shot herself twice. Like,
yeah, I mean that's, if you miss the first time while you're trying to commit suicide, then you try again, right?
It's odd.
Yeah, that's odd as shit.
The whole damn thing's weird.
It's very weird. Remember, Megan, the neighbor? She gave a different account. She claims that while sitting on her porch, she saw Jessica and Matthew with the boys arrive back home after going to Walmart. Then within a half an hour or so, she and her husband heard a gunshot before running out to her porch and hearing another shot. And moments later, she saw Matthew walk quickly to his truck and leave. When officers finally arrive, might I add, the entire thing can be found online from their body cams. They found that both boys were in their own bedrooms. The oldest was sleeping, and the baby was in the crib crying. They immediately bust down the door to the closet to find Jessica on the floor, lying on a pillow soaked with blood, and Matthew's gun lying underneath her. When they pulled Jessica from the closet, they realized that she was still alive and breathing, but they were having a difficult time finding where she was shot. They could tell it was coming from her head because her hair was matted and also soaked in blood, but they were unable to find the actual gunshot wound to stop it from bleeding.
So you're telling me that the neighbor's account was pretty much 2 hours before Matthew's account on when the gunshots occurred? Because, I mean, Matthew was saying it was around, 1 o'clock in the morning? And the neighbor is saying, no, it was more like 10 o'clock. They also found Jessica's red divorce diary just inside the closet with her, left out in the open, which was something that was never left out in the open. Remember, these were her thoughts, her observations, things that she was keeping track of.
And Matthew was unaware of.
Exactly. They had found that some of the pages had been ripped out. And again, remember, very important to her that, you know, she documented every time Matthew came and went, her plans, all of that, literally everything. Also, another strange thing was that the officers never found any blood splatter whatsoever anywhere in the closet or the house from a gunshot wound. You can also see this on the body cams from the officers. If you find that online, you can check it out. You'll see for yourself that there is no blood splatter.
Yeah, and that's one rule of thumb whenever there's a gunshot. The speed of the bullet traveling through and the exit point, there's going to be a lot of blood splatter.
Yeah, it was strange because there was, like, one bullet hole in the wall of the closet fairly up high, mm-hmm. and then another one kind of down low.
Right.
And then, like we said, she was found on the floor, and the pillow that she was laying on was just completely covered in blood.
Mm-hmm.
And if she would have shot herself and there were the two points in which it had entered the wall, you would think that there would be blood splatter somewhere.
There most definitely would.
It's very, very interesting.
That is very interesting because it sort of sounds like she didn't get shot.
Exactly.
I mean, or shoot herself for that matter.
Right. Megan had at one point come outside when the EMTs and law enforcement were there and asked if it was Jessica. After they confirmed, she said that she tried telling them that she was with her earlier in the night and that Jessica wasn't suicidal. She was actually happy. She was getting a divorce and had plans on moving in with her sister and starting a new job the very next day. There were also three other neighbors that night that stated that they heard what sounded like gunshots around 11 p.m. Again, 2 whole hours before Matthew reported the two shots fired.
curiouser and curiouser.
Yeah, I wonder why they never took that into consideration when investigating this.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wonder that too. It's really interesting how one freaking doped up D-bag could be like, oh, I totally saw so-and-so at what's his place and he totally killed him.
Right.
Like, oh, well then we're just going to go arrest him real quick and put him away for life.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like even just Megan alone is a pretty good witness.
Yeah, and then her husband, and seeing, then like three other neighbors. Come yeah. on, people, get your
seeing
shit together.
Seeing them coming home, seeing Matthew leaving, hearing the gunshots, so on and so forth. Another thing I wanted to mention was Jessica's phone. So when they found Jessica, they found not only Matthew's service gun laying underneath of her, but also her cell phone. And if she sent that text message, so let's say she did not send that text message to Matthew, because spoiler alert, she says that she did not. So how would that be possible? Like, can you schedule a text to send after the fact?
Well, I think with newer technology, and it may even be standard with newer phones, after like the Galaxy S7 Edge and stuff like that, that it's built into the operating system or built into the app, the messaging app, that you can set a scheduled text, you know, to send at a certain time or something like that. But 2016-ish, I'm not really 100% on
right.
how big of a thing that was at yeah. that point in time.
I mean, I know like on social media, like Instagram, for instance, you can schedule a post to post at a later date. So I kind of wondered if it was a similar thing with text messages, because to be honest with you, I don't even think that they checked cell phone towers for pinging. So for all we know, Matthew could have had her phone with him at that time.
That's true. And if not, I mean, you know, if she's incapacitated in a closet, how hard would it be to take her phone that didn't have a lock on it, pop her open, fashion up a little text message, mm-hmm. and send it away?
Exactly. It's hard. It's strange.
Yeah. I wonder if his fingerprints are on that phone.
I don't know.
They probably didn't check because he's a cop.
I doubt it. Jessica was then transported to the Atlanta Trauma Center, but not before Sheriff Wendell Beam. You remember Sheriff Beam, right?
Oh, yeah.
Matthew's grandfather.
Wendell Beam.
Mm-hmm.
He just sounds like a good old boy.
So he had officers notify Jessica's family that she had died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. But remember, Jessica didn't die.
No, she didn't.
She was still alive when they found her. Oh, and I just want to mention at this point that Matthew then read another text message from his girlfriend after the responding officers arrived to the apartment. Just wanted to slide that one in there for you, too.
Oh, God. This friggin' guy. Once Jessica arrived at the Atlanta Trauma Center, doctors worked quickly to stop the bleeding and save Jessica's life. But in order to do so, they ended up having to shave her head. Once they did, they were shocked because there was no gunshot wound. Jessica hadn't been shot at all. Instead, they found that she had blunt force trauma on the top of her head. Jessica spent 3 weeks in a coma with a traumatic brain injury as the hospital staff tried desperately to alleviate the pressure and fluid around her brain. Then once she was finally able to talk on May 10th, 2016, she told officers that she had been in the closet getting ready for bed that night because she was starting a new job the next day. But then she and Matthew started arguing about Matthew's girlfriend and things she had found on his phone. But she can't remember much else after that.
They questioned her if she had ever held Matthew's gun, which she denied ever holding. And they never found any gunshot residue on her hands either. She also told officers that she had never thought about hurting herself, that things were finally looking up for her, and she was happy. She was getting ready to move out, getting on with her life, getting out of the marriage with Matthew, starting a new job, and things were great. She also said that she never sent that text message to Matthew, that she would have never told him that she loved him, because at that very moment, she didn't. They were over and getting a divorce. It's just not something she would have said.
Matthew was never charged with anything involving Jessica's case. He was questioned by law enforcement and admitted to having problems in the marriage. He also admitted to having an affair. He even went as far as to tell police that Jessica had dated somebody else while they were broken up before they got married, and that she had admitted their youngest son wasn't his. Matthew's clothes were never tested for gunshot residue, and his hands were never bagged and tested either.
Hmm. That's kind of interesting.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, there's a whole buttload of stuff here for motive if he was going to attempt to murder his wife.
I agree with you.
Even if it was kind of like a crime of passion mm-hmm. and it kind of happened in the heat of the moment,
yeah,
there is still a shit ton of...
motive.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. And like
somebody discovered, say, a secret divorce diary.
Right.
Or, got a little upset.
I mean, I don't know when she had told him that his son wasn't his, if she even told him this, but mm-hmm. even that could...
That's a big motive.
Know? Yeah, right. You know what? Exactly.
It honestly seems to me as if, though, he's inadvertently admitting to doing all of this.
Yeah.
While simultaneously explaining to those around him and fellow officers, you know, like, look at the kind of person she is
right.
and what she put me through and the struggles that I've had to overcome
exactly.
because of her and da-da-da-da-da-da-da and just playing this huge victim card. And it's like...
All the while, he's dropping all the hints.
This is why I killed her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I totally agree.
Or tried to kill her.
I feel the exact same way.
You know?
It's crazy.
Yet,
and the fact that they never freaking tested his clothes...
Yeah.
Or... bagged his hands and tested them for gunshot residue. Like, what the hell? They tested her hands.
Yeah.
But they never tested his.
What'd they find on her hands,
nothing.
By the way? Nothing?
Nothing. Her hands tested negative.
Yeah,
like,
of course they did.
What? I think that
dude.
They possibly found her DNA on his gun, but if she's laying
dude,
on it, bleeding
on.
To death,
yeah.
I mean, of course it's gonna...
There's gonna be some DNA on the damn gun.
Hell yeah.
Okay, hold on. Number one, the first person they always go to in a situation... similar to this.
The husband did it.
The husband. The husband. Okay. If there was no gunshot residue, gunshot powder residue on her hands, then whose freaking hands shot the gun?
Right.
So the first place I would have checked, even if I was like a dumb cop, would have been the husband's hands.
The next person.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if, oh my God, it's so sloppy. There's a lot of sloppy
Absolutely.
Shit.
Absolutely. Or it's a cover-up, or maybe both.
I don't know
ding, ding,
so
ding.
Much if it's a cover-up that they just, they didn't look at what was in front of them.
Absolutely
you know,
not.
They were like, oh, you know, he's one of us. He's one of our boys. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, we got to, you know, handle this and get it dealt with and get him back out there.
From
fight crime.
What I understand, they never even did follow-ups on, like, any of the neighbors, like the four neighbors that said that they heard the shots. I don't even think that they really even followed up with the physician that treated Jessica in the hospital either.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you're right. It was either a cover-up or
mm-hmm.
they were just, like, staying away from it,
it's
keeping their nose
mind-blowing.
Out of it. It is
Absolutely.
Boggling for sure.
So many believe, like we said, that the department had helped cover up Matthew's attempted murder of his wife, Jessica. They finally closed the case, ruling that Jessica had attempted suicide. And for quite a few months, she sat listed as deceased.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Matthew was allowed to go back out to the field as a police officer while Jessica tried to move forward with that terrifying event. Even though she isn't able to remember, she believes that Matthew became angry and hit her over the head with something when he realized what he had done and that she was injured and bleeding badly. He staged a scene to make it look like a suicide, and a very, very bad one at that.
Very bad one at that. Like, it's embarrassing how poorly of a job he did.
Right.
It's even more embarrassing that the other police officers involved with
this case
or the scene couldn't pick up on any of this
mm-hmm.
stuff. You know, and the worst part is, like, this is what Kayla researched, and... there's more than enough information in this for me to have formed a very strong, educated opinion on what happened.
There's quite a bit of information. And like I said over and over in this, if you guys just go watch the video from the body cams, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
You can see every little bit of evidence in that video. Like, I don't even think I mentioned in here the fact that, like, Matthew had called... from his police radio, and they told him to wait outside. So apparently he had went outside and supposedly left his phone inside where it was caught on the body cam. But yet, when looking back at his text messages, He would have been on his phone when he should have been outside, but making it apparently he was inside of the house by himself before police arrived. Like, there's a lot to it.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
It's very crazy.
I agree with her. I think that he did get mad and, again, in the heat of the moment, hit her with something. Was like, oh, shit, like, she's really hurt. What am I going to do? Left, freaking out. Make it look like a staged suicide. And came back and was like, hey, like, my wife's trying to kill herself.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And you know what? Had she had any gunshot wounds to her head or anything at all on her body like that, he might have gotten away with it.
Yeah.
You know, again, she can't remember.
Did he get away with it?
Yeah. Yeah. He's back out on the field. He's a police officer. He's living his life.
Nobody's revisited this.
Mm-mm.
Nobody. Oh, my God.
I do believe that there is one man. He's just like a normal person that's pretty much started to dedicate his life to being a private investigator and looking into her case and like digging into all of the evidence. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe at some point he'll gather enough information or be able to like bring it all forward for a conviction.
All you need is somebody with a half of a freaking brain to review the footage, review the statements, anything like that. And I'm sorry. And maybe not somebody related to him.
Right.
And the son of a bitch should be going to prison for a very long time.
I think it's crazy.
Child endangerment, attempted to murder. What else? They're good at slapping on extra charges that just sound good. I'm sure they could find at least 10 more to put on there to put him away for the rest of his life, because he does not deserve to be out there.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So I've wanted to do this case for a long time. And the first time I heard it, it was like, we absolutely have to do this case if we ever do a podcast. So
glad we did this case.
Finally, here is the Jessica Boynton case.
Boynton.
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 I have a really difficult time saying her name. Boynton.
Me too. I feel weird.
I don't think
it.
She goes by Boynton anymore. I think she goes by her.
Would you?
Hell no.
Fudge no, man.
Hell no. I do believe that she goes by her maiden name, which Lester. Lester.
Change the kids' name as well to cut off that whole Boynton. You know.
Yeah.
What do you call that?
The Boynton. I can't. Gene. No, like name line. I can't even think of it.
Damn it. Neither can I. Okay. Yeah. Just to, you know, like, you know.
Last name.
Yeah. That thing.
We suck. We're sick. Sorry.
Yeah. It's seeping into my brain.
Yes.
And I'm losing my wit.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Well, make sure to
put your thumbs in the air and stare blankly into the sky with a creepy smile on your face, because that's not what just happened.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
Yes. Because we post a ton of really terrible memes. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, our Twitter is at Hello Crime. Mm-hmm. Twitter gave us that name. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Twitter. You're like almost nailed it.
Yeah. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, because that helps us a lot in more than one way. We get to enjoy reading your comments.
Yes.
That lets us know if you guys like what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helps us just in general with Apple Podcasts. That helps kind of rank us a little bit on there as well.
Yep. And we also have a Patreon. You can join for as little as a dollar a month. Yeah. And there are goodies to come with that.
Mm-hmm.
We Stickers. Would really enjoy the support, because the more you support us, the more we can support other people.
And the more we can do. We can keep putting these episodes out. We can keep, you know, trucking along.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, one last thing before we go. Don't forget, if you live in Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, any of these surrounding areas, we will be having our live event at the end of this month on January 25th at 1 p.m. at the Meigs County Public Library. So come out and hang out with us for our event.
Yeah.
We'd love to chit-chat with you and see you guys in person. We're super excited. We've got tons of stuff to talk about. So
yes, we do.
Come hang out with us that day. Yeah.
It'll be fun. Mm-hmm. It's in Pomeroy, Ohio.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we love you. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
We do.
All right.
Immensely.
Yeah.
A creepily amount of love.
Lots of love.
Lots. Yes. And lots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who will get the last
word? All right, guys.
I will get the last word.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye.
We are sound checking right now.
Boynton.
Jessica Boynton.
Boynton. Boynton. Sound check. Boynton. Boynton.
Baldwin County Sheriff's Department named Courtney Calloway. When Jessica finally addressed Matthew about the affair, she told him that she knew... he had been spending his time with Courtney and that she didn't want to keep...
Fucking suck, Kayla!
And that she didn't want to keep pretending and playing house. So that's... I don't know why this happens to me.
We should totally have a bloopers at the end of this one, since, you know, nobody died.
Okay. Okay, let me try this now.
Okay.
So the couple decided to go forward with getting a divorce, but... Oh my God. Why?
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm sick and dumb.
Oh, I can't wait to listen to this when it's over. It's okay, just breathe.
That was a Titancast episode.